Okay, today's daf is Kafchet. We're going to start at, Kafchet Amud Aleph at the top, the third line. Okay, Refor Shlem of the Dvar Batino is Avram Shem Ben Chana, Carmela Banimo, or the Pinin about Racha Frida, Chaim Alk, Esther Batsipor, Daniel Ben Mirim Chayrut, Yasub Ben Machale, about Rivka. Fal Yoshev Halak ben Bracha Bati, Elmir ben Batchai, Rina Chaya bat Shoshani, Yaakov ben Rosa, Tali Rechel bat Tamar Sarah, Alexander Ziskin ben Menucha, Yiloi Nishma Chana bat Tatar, Reza bat Tzara, and Svi Hirsch ben Yaakov Halevi Mela. If you remember, we were talking about Gilgul Shvua. And the whole question was, Gilgul Shvua, where do we learn it from? And we said we learned it from the Sota case. Remember, that was our whole source. We learned it because she says, Amen, Amen, and Amen al ha-arusa. And then we said, how could it be an arusa? So, because he can't be machayev for a shvua on the arusa. So we said, in the end, it's a shvua on the nisua. But she's once she's taking a shvua, the fact that she's married, she's also going to take a shvua on the fact that even when she was engaged, she didn't sleep with anybody. Then we said, the very last thing we learned was at the bottom of Kaf Zayin Amabet about a Kavachomer. We can make a Kavachomer from the Sota, so we'll just read from there. Uma Sota shelo nitna li taba be'ed echad, legalgalim mamon shenitan li taba be'ed echad, right, that in the case of a Sota, in a case where you can't make her bring Eid Echad, legalgalim mamon shenitan li taba be'ed echad, so eno din shemegalgalim, so therefore, if a Sota case that you can't have Eid Echad, make her become a Sota, so then what do we say? Even in that case, Megalgalin. Sorry, I read it wrong. I knew I read it wrong. Uma Sota Shaloni Snali Tababe Eid Echad Megalgalin. See, that's why I read it. It wasn't working, right? Okay, so in the case of a Sota, even though lo nitnali tababe eid echad, you are megalgalin shvua. In other words, you need two eidim, you need a stronger. So mamon shenitnali tababe eid echad, eino din shemegalgalin. Okay, now the Gemara wants to say it like this, and it's a very confusing line. That's why I wanted to go back to see what we were up to, and now try to understand this line. Eshkecham bevadai safek minalan. So now we have a problem with this kavachomer, because according to this, we can prove bevadai, but how do we prove safek? Now, what does this mean, bevadai and safek? So it seems to be meaning, well, we have terms in other places in Shas, which I don't know if we've come across it much, but we will soon enough. Shema and Bari. Okay, Bari is a ta'ana where somebody comes and says, I know this is the case. And that's generally the case where we make someone take a shavua, where the guy comes with a vadai claim, and then the other guy, you know, and then and he has edachat to support it. Shema is where he says, I don't know, but I think that this is the case. So vadai and safek seem to be understood as shema, and as vadai is bari, where he knows for sure, and shema is safek. The problem is here that they're learning it from a Sota case, and the Sota case is not a vadai case. He doesn't know for sure that she was with the guy. So it sounds like it's saying, we understand from the Sota case that it's vadai, but where do we learn that what if the guy is misupak about this tviyama monit, and he doesn't know for sure, that we would also do a gilgul shvua on a case that's a safek? So because of that, the Mefarshim have different ways of understanding this. Some people say that what it means is that when you have, remember, there's two claims here. There's the case that you're chayav shvua in, and then there's the gilgul, right? We do a gilgul shvua, we can add in another case. So in the Sota case, we have a safek in both, right? He doesn't know for sure that she did it when she was nisua, he doesn't know for sure she did it when she was arusa. So either we mean that when it's a safek, we can be megalgal a safek, and that's how they ended that's what they learned from the Sota. But when you have a mamon case and you have a tana vadai, like you borrowed 100 shekel from me, I know that, and you say I only borrowed 50, so that would be where you're vadai that you owe me 100, I would say you're vadai. And then you want to be megalgal some other safek case. So that's what they're saying. In other words, when they're equal, safek, safek, so then like the Sota, so we understand. But can you do a Gilgul Shvua with a Vadai one that you're Chayav Shvua on and a Sefik one that you're Chayav Shvua? That's one way of reading it. Or you could say that it's just more like it's obvious that we can, that since you're Chayav Shvua in a Vadai case, that also you could do a Gilgul in a Vadai case. But how do you know that you could do a Gilgul also in a Sefik case? So it's not 100% clear exactly how to understand this question. So Tanya Rashbi Omer, Shun Ba Yochai Omer, Ne'emra Shvua Bachutz Ve'ne'emra Shvua Bifnim. Ma Shvua Ha'amura Bifnim. Asaba safek kevadai, af shvua hamura b'chutz asaba safek kevadai. Okay, so what does this mean? Shem Bar Yochai comes and says there's two different types of shvua. One is shvua shebachutz and one is shvua shebifnim. So to understand what b'chutz is, you have to understand what bifnim is. Bifnim is the shvua on the Beit HaMikdash. What shvua is that? The Sota, because she takes her shvua in the Beit HaMikdash. So there's a sota shvua, and then there's a shvua b'chutz, and that's a regular mamonot shvua. So now they say, in a shvua hamura bifnim, in the Beit HaMikdash, asaba safei kevadai. Now this might answer our previous question as to why we called it a vadai if we were talking about the sota, because the Torah views the safek as if it's a vadai claim. Some people say, by the way, it's vadai because he knows that he was she was nistira, because he has edim at least to prove that she went against his word. Maybe that would make it a vadai. But anyway, what are they saying here? A safek is treated like a vadai in the sota case because he's safek about her, but yet it can be mechayev shvua as if it was vadai. So therefore, af shvua hamura b'chutz asaba safek kevadai. So therefore, we can say that in a dine mamono case, we can also treat a safek as a vadai and take this gilgul shvua and basically say that just like the case, let's say for sure the claim that she didn't do anything when she was in Arusa is a safek, right? But yet it's treating it like a vadai, and we're allowed to be megagel shvua. So also we're going to take a dine mamono case and say, even if it's the person who's claiming, he makes the claim, it's only a vadai claim, we can also treat it as, he's making a safek claim, a doubtful claim, we can treat it as a vadai and make him take a shvua. Ad hechan gilgul shvua. To what extent can we do a gilgul shvua? Okay, we're going to see what this means in a minute. Like, what it really means is how far, okay, we know we could do it on a regular dine mamono case, but to what other extent can we do this? Where else can we say that we can mechayev him a gilgul shvua? Remember the way we started. We started with the Mishnah. What did the Mishnah say? That you can't do it, you're not mechayev a shvua on a karka case, right? That you are in metaltalim, right? A modem a mitzad in karka wouldn't be mechayev a shvua. But if you're already chayev shvua metaltalim, we could be mechayev you also on land. So now they're going to say, on what other things can we require you besides land? Like, how far does it extend to? What other issues? So now they're going to say, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav, and they're going to have a little issue with what he says. Da amrale hi shavali she'en avdiata. He can say, now the assumption is that we're talking about an Evik Knani. The owner has a claim that the guy's an Evik Knani, and the Evik Knani says, I'm not your Evid. So he says, swear to me that you're not my Evid. Okay? And we're saying not only can we extend it to land cases, we can also extend it to avdut cases, okay? To say that you're not my Evid. So now they say, Hahu shimute mishamtinan le. If I claim that you're my Evid Knani, and you claim that you're not my Evid Knani, and I make this claim, we put me in nidoy. Why do we put me in nidoy? We're going to see now. Detanya, hakore l'chavero Evid, yehei b'nidoy. If I call someone an Evid Knani, we put me in nidoy. Why? Because you're basically saying to this person, if he's not an Evid Knani, right, then he's a Jew, basically, because he was, let's say he's an Evid Knani that was freed. And the assumption is I'm claiming that you're my Evid Knani. So therefore, it's very insulting to someone to say such a thing. And therefore, if you claim such a thing without having any real basis, we put you in Nidoy. So therefore, we're saying, how can we possibly be b'chayiv the Evid to take a Shvua, right? They should be putting me in Nidoy for claiming that. And not only that, but if you claim someone's a Mamzer, Sofegeta Arba'im, you get Malkot. And if you claim someone's a Rasha, Yored Imo L'Chayav. Okay, there's two interpretations of what Yored Imo L'Chayav is. One means we can harass you, okay? Like Yored Imo L'Chayav, we can get down into your life and you know, harass you. Another interpretation is that Yored Imo L'Chayav means you can even mess up his livelihood. In other words, you can start taking away job opportunities from him and things like that, okay? You can tell people don't go buy from him, don't, things like that. Okay, there's some cute vortlach about what the difference was between the three, but I'm going to leave those aside. You can look later. Ella, so therefore, how could it possibly be that he says to me, he shavali she'en avdi, and that would be a case where we would do a gilgul shvua. Ella, amarava, he shavali shelonim kartali be'evit ivri. He says, swear to me, right? Then at least we're calling him a Jew. We're not saying you're a non-Jew, right? What are we saying? We're saying, swear that you're not an evit ivri. Okay, so now what's the problem here? The whole thing was, to what extent can we use a gilgul shvua, right? Now, if he's an Evid Ivri, then this is just a basic case of dinei mamono, because what's Evid Ivri? It's saying you didn't have enough money to pay me back for what you owed me, and therefore you have to sell yourself into slavery. So therefore, we say, Hi, ta'anata ma'aliyata hi. Mamoni le'kabei. In other words, this is just a regular dina mamono case. In other words, there's no chidush that you could do a gilgul shvua. It's a regular dina mamono case, which obviously you could do a gilgul shvua. So therefore, remember, the whole thing was, to what extent does gilgul shvua extend, even to cases we didn't expect it to extend to? So now they say no. It's not just, to say an Eved Ivri is just a dina mamono, it is not true. And at least, especially according to Rava himself, who said this. Rava l'tame, he goes l'shitato, he's consistent within other things he says. De amar Rava, Eved Ivri, gufo kanoi. His guf is kanoi l'cha. So in other words, this isn't just a case of dina mamono, it's a case since the Eved, his body belongs to you, it's more than just the financial rights of his, you know, masa yadayim go to you and things like that. It's more than that. Okay? And therefore, this is a case of, you know, where you would say, oh, wow, gilgul shvua also extends to here. So they say, if gufo kanoi, wait a minute, ihachi hainu karka. And karka, we already said from the Mishnah, is included in gilgul shvua. So again, you wouldn't be saying the whole thing is, right, gilgul shvua, the whole chidush was it applies also to karka. So now we want to find a case, right, to what extent even past karka does it apply. Now, if you say avdut, Eved Ivri, we now said, well, according to Rava, at least, gufo kanoi. So we could say that's extended past karka, not only to karka, also to avadim ivriim. But now we're going to say, but it's just like karka. Eved Ivri, if gufo kanoi, is like karka. So therefore, it's in the same category, so it's no chidush. So now they're going to say, no, it is a chidush. Because ma'u detema karku de avde inche de mezabne bitzina. Im ita dezabin leitle kala. Hi, im ita dezabin kala itle. And therefore, ka mashmalan. Okay, what does this mean? This means that, let's go back to the beginning. You might want to say what? Again, this is all. Yes, Eved Ivri is like karka, but you might have thought for a particular reason that gilgul shvua would only apply to karka and not to Eved Ivri. Why is that the case? So number one, the main difference between them is land, as we saw yesterday, if you sell it without a shtar, then it doesn't have a kol. People won't hear about it. Versus an Eved Ivri, which the assumption is, always has a kol. People find out. When you sell, an Eved Ivri gets sold in slavery, everybody knows about it. So therefore, there's a difference between them in terms of, will people know? So now why is this relevant to gilgul shvua? Think about it. If everybody will know, and let's say Eved Ivri is something, according to the assumption of the Gemara, it's mitpersem, word gets out. So therefore, if I claim you're my Eved Ivri and you say no, obviously it's a case where nobody else knows, because if there was a kol and everybody knew, then it would be obvious he's my Eved Ivri. So therefore, if there's no kol, and I claim you're my Eved Ivri, and you say, no, I'm not, well, there's no evidence to back up my claim, and therefore maybe we wouldn't require a gilgul shvua. Whereas, in the case of karka, since there isn't necessarily going to be a call about the land, not everyone's necessarily going to know. Therefore, if I claim I bought the land and you claim, no, you didn't, and there's no evidence to support the claim that I didn't buy the that I did buy the land, the fact that there's no evidence doesn't bother us because, in general, a land could be sold without anybody knowing about it. And therefore, in that case, we require me to do a gilgul shvua, whereas in the case of avdut, since we expect there to be evidence and there isn't any. Therefore, right, we expect people to know and they don't. Therefore, you might have thought you can't do a gilgul shvua. And that's the chidush. That even in an Eved Ivri case where we would expect there to be some sort of evidence, as opposed to land, where people won't necessarily know about it, but we expect there to at least be rumors circulating about the Eved Ivri. And even if there aren't any, we still can require a gilgul shvua. Again, that's all in the case where you owe me a shvua for something else that you're chayav, then we allow, right, we force you also to swear about the Eved Ivri case. Okay, right, that's the gilgul shvua, where you're owed me a shvua about a monetary claim that for sure 100% you're owed me a shvua about. And in addition, I have a claim that you're my Eved Ivri, so we can make you swear even though there's zero evidence to the extent that, you know, nobody knows about the fact that you're my Eved, and we would have expected so. So kamash malan, that even in that case. And that answers our question of to what extent is gilgul shvua, not just in karka, also in Eved Ivri. Okay, now we're going to move on to kinyan chalipin. We've talked about this before. So until now, what did we say? The last Mishnah was, if you want to buy, right, nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayut, land, you buy bekesef shtar ubechazaka, ein lehem achrayut, they're only niknim b'mishicha. And then if you remember, we had a whole discussion there. We said, when we learned the Mishnah, we said, well, there's also kinyan chalipin, but we didn't bring it up here because the Mishnah was talking about cases where there's a difference between the two of them, right? In other words, in Karka, it was Kesef Shtar and Chazaka. In non-karka metaltalin, it was Meshicha. So now we're going to say, but by the way, for both of them, you can do a Kinyan Chalipin. What's a Kinyan Chalipin? So it's basically a barter, right? I'm trading something for something of yours. And the chidush is, and we're going to read this in a minute, that as soon as, let's say, we're machlif, you know, the case, they give a shor for a chamor, according to the Mishnah, right? That's the case. Right, shor chamor b'shor, or shor b'para, or whatever it might be. So I give you my shor, you give me your para. As soon as I do mashicha on your para, or whatever, right, whichever one it is, your animal is automatically mine, even though it's not in my possession at all. You follow? We're doing a barter, so as soon as one takes one side, right, then
the other side
already is, which, what does that mean? It means that if my animal that I now acquire by you acquiring my animal, right, you took my animal, you still have your animal in your possession. Let's say something happens to it. So it's your responsibility. You have to provide me with a new animal. Whereas if it was already, I'm sorry, the opposite. It's that if it's in your possession, but it already belongs to me. So if something happens to that animal, then it's my responsibility. In other words, you don't have to provide me with a new animal because it's already mine. Okay? That's one aspect of the chidush. Right, so maybe you should have Dine Shomer. So there's actually two interpretations as to what the chidush about the Kinyan Chalipin is. Either it means that it's already mine, because at that point it's already been acquired to me, so you're not a Shomer anymore because it already belongs to me, so it's my responsibility. The other opinion says, no, that's not the issue. The issue is, let's say you change your mind and you don't want to give me your animal. So once you took yours, you can't change your mind about giving me mine. Okay, that there's no, right, the Kinyan has happened and there's no ability to be chozer bo on it.
Yeah. Sorry, can you ask your question again? Interesting question. If I give you my cow and you're supposed to give me your donkey,
right?
But the donkey is still in your possession, and I own it, are you a shomer?
You should have a responsibility. You're watching over my item, but I didn't ask you to watch over my item. In other words, I should be taking my item. That's the whole thing we learned in the Bava Metzia Shir, that once you finish the job and the person doesn't collect it, again, depending on the circumstances, but it could be at that point he's no longer responsible. So that's exactly what we're saying here, once Razel takes her animal, I should take my animal. It's my fault if I haven't taken it yet. It's mine. It belongs to me 100%. She's not responsible for it anymore. Okay, so there's two approaches as to, is that the issue, or is the issue that Razel can change her mind, basically? In other words, or she can't change her mind once she takes her animal, okay, when we do a barter. Now, there's going to be a whole debate in the Gemara about where does Kinyan Chalipin work with? Okay, we talked about it, let's say, with animals. Okay, so the basic, before we even read it all inside, I'll just tell you. The basic source for Kinyan Chalipin comes from Boaz, from the story of Ruth. Okay? And there's the pasuk that says, let me just find it. The pasuk says, it's the pasuk about here. V'zot lefanim b'Yisrael, al ha-ge'ula v'al ha-tmura, that's the important word, tmura. Tmura is exchange. L'kayem kol davar shalaf ishna alo v'natan l're'eyu. Right, he takes up a shoe and gives it to his friend. Okay, this is talking about kinyanim basically, and it says ala tmura, exchange. So they learn from here that it's exchange. But what's the case they bring? He gives his shoe. Now, what's a shoe? A shoe is, we call in halachic terms, it's a kli. It's something that has a purpose. Okay, it's usable. Now we're going to distinguish today between a kli, okay, which is the shoe. And that's going to be the highest level, okay? Something that has a purpose, okay? Like a purpose or a useful purpose. You can use it for something. The next category is going to be peirot, they're going to call them, okay? Produce, which doesn't exactly have a purpose. You don't use it to work the land. You don't use it for any particular purpose. You eat it, but you don't use it. And the other is going to be a matbeah. Can you do a Kinyan Chalipin with money? So if I gave Razel money, would we say that now in general, what did we say? You can't buy metaltalin with money, okay? And we're going to see that there's a machloket about whether a Chalipin can be done with money. And the general psak is it can't be done with money, okay? But the first assumption of the reading of this Mishnah is that the Mishnah is talking about with a coin, okay? And then they're going to say, but how could that be? Because we can't do Chalipin with a coin. Okay, that's going to be... So then we're going to reinterpret the Mishnah later to say, it's not talking about a matbeah, and then it's going to be, what is it talking about? So, here's the Mishnah. Kol ha-ne'aseh damim ba'acher. And here's why it's confusing. What does it mean, ne'aseh damim ba'acher? Okay, damim is money, so it sounds like coins, okay? But ne'aseh damim ba'acher, we're going to see this means different things, so we're going to have to interpret it differently. But it means it has value, okay? Something that has a monetary value. By the way, okay, just one other word of intro. From the laws of Kinyan Chalipin, they also learn, as an extension of Kinyan Chalipin, Kinyan Sudar. What's Kinyan Sudar? Kinyan Chalipin, the assumption is I'm trading a chamor for sure, let's say. Chamor has value. Sure has value, right? Monetary value. That's what the Mishnah seems to be saying here. Kol ha'nasa damim ba'acher, if it has value. As opposed to if we do a Kinyan Sudar. What's that? When we take a handkerchief. Now, a handkerchief doesn't have the same value as the object that, right? Generally, you do a barter with equal value or close to equal, right? A handkerchief clearly does not have the same value as whatever it is you're purchasing. And in fact, when people do a Kinyan Sudar, sometimes they even return the handkerchief to the person, right, who they acquired it from. It's just a symbolic. So that's something that comes out of Kinyan Chalipin, okay? And it's learned out from there that you can also do it on something that doesn't have value. But the general Kinyan Chalipin is something that has the same value. It's shaveh b'shaveh. Okay. So kol ha'nasa damim ba'acher, it has value as money. Kevan shezacha zeh. As soon as, like I said, as soon as Razel takes her part, nitchayev zeh b'chalifav, and that's what we said as two different interpretations. Either Razel has to give me her animal and can't change her mind, or she's already given up ownership and I already am responsible for my animal. Ketzad, or whatever it is we're trading. Hichliv shor b'para o chamor b'shor, kevan shezacha zeh nitchayev zeh b'chalifav. So now they bring an example, ketzad, and they bring an example of animals. Now, where would animals fall? Is it like a kli or is it like peirot? Okay, so it's actually a debate. Okay, so you would think it's more similar to a kli because an animal has a purpose; it can work for you. But even though it is more similar to a kli, and we'll see later that when they think that the Mishnah is actually talking about peirot, they're going to say that it's really basar shor and basar, and they change the words. But even though they change the words, the Mefarshim say that a shor itself or a chamor, even though it can work, it's still more similar to peirot than it is to kli. It really wouldn't fall into the kli category because it's not exactly a kli. Anyway, that's a side thing. So now the Mishnah, the Gemara assumes that kol ha'nitchayev damim ba'achir means money. Matbea, coins. Now, what's the difference between a coin? A coin, why can't you do chalipin with it? Because if we're trading things with equal value, a coin doesn't have value in and of itself. A coin is symbolic of value. Okay? A coin has no... right, because what could happen to the coin? They talked about this. We saw this in other sugyas. It could be that the stamp, you know, gets rubbed off, like the engraving is rubbed off, and then it just becomes a little piece of metal, which is useless. Okay, so a coin itself is just a piece of metal, and it doesn't have any inherent value. This would be different from, let's say, a gold coin, which is, you know, valued at the amount of gold that it is. But the assumption is we're talking about some piece of metal that was turned into a coin, and it doesn't have inherent value. And that's why you can't generally do chalipin with it. So they're going to say now, chalipin mainihu matbea. If that's the case, right, we're assuming the chalipin they're talking about is with a coin. Shma mina matbea nase chalipin? Can we assume them from the Mishnah that what they're saying is a matbea can do chalipin? And we know we can't. So Amar of Yehuda, hachi kamar. This is the way you read the Mishnah. Kol hanishom damim ba'acher. Anything that has monetary value, that's what we said before, right? Like an animal has monetary value. Kevan shezachazeh nitchayev b'chalifa, right? Then they're nitchayev in chalipin. Now, that's, again. Daikanami dekatane. We can also prove this because what did the Mishnah say? Ketzad, how does this work? And what did it give an example of? Not money, but an animal, right? Hichlif shor b'para o chamor b'shor. Shma mina. Okay? So that's what they say. The Mishnah must be talking about the whole chidush is that you can be machlif, a value, right? An animal, not money. Okay? This doesn't work with a matbea. So now they want to know, according to the first reading, what were they thinking? When they thought it was a matbea, what exactly, how did they read this Mishnah? Ulamai desalagadati meikara de matbea nase chalipin mai ketzad. Right? If you thought it was talking about a matbea, then the Mishnah makes no sense because the Mishnah said ketzad, and it says hichlif shor b'parah. It should have said hichlif shor b'matbea. Right? It doesn't make any sense to say it the way it did. So now, what are the answer? Hachi ka'amar. This is what they meant to say. What they meant to say. The first line said a matbea because remember, what did we say? We started off saying that the base case, right, the main case we learned chalipin is with a kli. So now, what was it saying? The first line came to say, you can do it with a matveh. The second line came to say, ketzad, came to add, not only can you do it with matveh, you can also do it with peirot. Okay? Hachi kamar, peirot nami avde chalipin. Okay? How? Ketzad, hichlif, and here's what I told you we were going to get to, basar shor bepara, o basar chamor beshor, kevan shezachazen nitchaye b'chalifav. Okay, so that's what it's coming to say. It's talking about the meat of the animal. Like I said, it could have even said the animal itself, because really an animal for these purposes would be considered peiro, but they wanted to show you a case that's even more similar to peiro, where we'll be talking about meat. Okay, so the meat of the para, the meat of the shor, you'd already be chayav, and that's the chidush, the number one matbea, number two, peiro also. So now they say, well, by the way, I didn't mention this, but peiro, whether peiro can do chalipin or not, is a machloket. So this reading is Hanicha, it works very nicely, L'Rav Sheshet, to Amar Perot Avde Chalipin. Ela L'Rav Nachman, to Amar Perot Lo Avde Chalipin, Ma'ika L'Memar. But how would Rav Nachman have read the Mishnah according to the reading that was talking about a matbea? So now we're going to have a third reading. So our first reading was, it was talking about, right, that you can do a Chalipin with animals, right, something that has monetary value, okay, which you could call Perot, really. The second reading is that it was talking about a matbea. Right, but that's the reading we've rejected, but at least we've explained how they even thought so. It's talking about a matbea, and the second line comes to include also peirot. Now we're going to have a third reading. Yesh tamim shehem kechalipin. Sometimes money can operate as chalipin, even though money generally doesn't. Sometimes it can. How so? What's the case? Ketzad. Hichlif demei shor bepara, o demei chamor beshor. Okay, what does this mean? Let's say I buy a shor from Razel, and what happens? I buy the shor, but I don't give her money for it. I say, I'll pay you money later. Okay, so I owe Razel now the value of a shor. Comes Razel, and she wants to buy a para from me. Okay, later, like let's say a month later. Razel comes, she wants to buy a para. I say, oh, you know what? I owe you money anyway, so why don't you just take my para, and we'll be done with it, okay? And we'll seal the deal. As soon as I say to her, I'm giving you the money that I owe you, right? Instead of that, I'll just give you my para. As soon as I say those words, I've done a kinyan chalipin. Because what have I done? I've traded an object for an object, but really, at this point, it's just a monetary value because I owe...
No, you
right?
didn't. You traded money for an object.
I traded money for an object. Right. In other words, why does it... So we're going to see why the kinyan chalipin works. But what I've done is I've traded the money I owed her for an object. So this is a case. Now, I'm not giving her a matbea, but I've basically given her money in place of her... Right now, but she gets my para.
But Razel doesn't have to give consent?
No, Razel's... No. That's fine with Razel.
Oh, no, but she said you can't change
I think
it. So she has to. Wants it.
Oh, no, she, I want the donkey.
Right, she wants it. She's asking me for it.
I'm asking for it.
You, right, okay, she's happy okay. not to have to pay money,
yeah,
right?
She's giving you a cow, not a donkey.
All right.
Right, exactly. Okay, so that's how it works. We're going to see in a minute why Kenyan Chalipin works with money in this case. Okay, in other words, here we have, what's interesting here is nothing's even passing hands. And just by my saying, I'm going to, instead of paying you money, right, I'm going to give you this para for free, right? Okay, that money that I'm being basically giving up, or Razel's really giving up the money, is the Kinyan Chalipin, okay? That affects the Kinyan. So now, how does this work? Okay, we'll see right now. My time, Savrala ki Rabbi Yochanan. Ah, if you remember, we had a machlok at Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, if you remember, about Tamar, Dvar Torah Ma'ot Konot, Umatam. Okay, remember, what did we talk about when we talked about Metaltalin? You can't use money. Why not? Well, it's a machloket. Rish Lakish says, even from the Torah, money never worked. You have to do Mashiach. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, Mida Oraita, money would work. But why did they say money doesn't work? Now we'll read it inside. We didn't read it inside last time. Matam amru Mashiach kone. In other words, what happened? Mida Oraita, money is fine. But Mida Rabbanan, they made a takana that you can't do a kinyan metaltalin with money. Why? Gzeira shema yomar lo nisrafu chitecha ba'aliyah. What are we worried? If I give Razel money for chitim, okay, for the wheat, I pay her money, she has the wheat still in her possession. So now what happens? If I give Razel the money for the wheat, and we say that that affected a kinyan, it goes back to what we said earlier today that Naomi asked about. At that point, Razel's not responsible for my wheat if we said the kinyan was affected. I'm responsible for my wheat. Let's say before Rachel gives me the wheat, she has a fire in her aliyah and all the stored up stuff starts burning. What's Rachel going to do? She's going to run out of her house as quickly as possible, but grab whatever thing she really cares about. Now, is she going to take my chitim? Of course not, because she knows she's not responsible for them. And to avoid a situation like that from happening and, you know, being very angry at Rachel for the fact that she totally disregarded my stuff, we basically say money doesn't work. That wheat still belongs to you, Rachel. And until such time as you give me the wheat and I'm Moshech the wheat, then it's yours. Okay? It's still your responsibility. So therefore, let's go back to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that really midoraita damim or konim. So therefore, how does this work with the Takana de Rabbanan? How does this work? What do we always say? Milta de shachiach gazru barabanan. Milta de lo shachiach lo gazru barabanan. The case I brought earlier of me saying that I owed Rezel money and now I'm going to say, oh, well, now you want something of mine. I'll just be, right? Well, just get rid of the money I owe you and you'll take my animal. So that case is a rare case. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan, me de oraita, really money would be kone. And therefore, in this case, since it's a rare case, they weren't gozer. Oh, well, maybe nisrafuch techabalia. Okay? Whereas in a regular case, they would gozer, that it doesn't work. But in this case, money would work. And that's the third reading of our Mishnah. But our Mishnah is coming to say this is a unique case of money where it would work. And that's what it's talking about. So hichlif shor bepara really means when they do the ketzad, hichlif demei shor bepara. Okay, or Demei Chamor Beshor, or however, right, the Mishnah reads. So that's what it means. So now that works very well according to Rabbi Yochanan. But what are we going to have to say? How does this reading work according to Rish Lakish? Ulrish Lakish to Amar Mashicha Meforesha Min HaTorah, that Mashicha is a Midoraita Halacha, and Kesef would never work Midoraita. So, Hanicha Yisavar Laka Rav Sheshet, Damar Perot Avde Chalipin, Mitaritzka Rav Sheshet. Right, he would just say, like, if he held like Rav Sheshet, right, if Rav Sheshet held like, and we'd say, okay, so according to Rish Lakish, you just read the Mishnah according to the option that it's coming to be Mechadesh Perot. But, Ela Yisavar Laka Rav Nachman, Damar Perot Lo Avde Chalipin, Umatbea Lo Kane, B'mai Mokela. But if he holds like Rav Nachman, who says Perot is Lo Kane, and Matbea is Lo Kane, and Matbea Mija Oraita is certainly no good, and therefore you can't say it's this weird case. So, what would you have to say? Al Korcha Ka Rav Sheshet Sfirale. You'd have to say that Rish Lakish holds like Rav Sheshet. Remember, Rav Sheshet comes later than Rish Lakish. But what it means is, right, he would never fit into Rish Lakish's reading. Rish Lakish would never fit into Rav Sheshet's reading. Rish Lakish would have to read it. If you wanted to understand the Mishnah according to Rish Lakish, you'd have to assume that we hold like, he Dafka holds like Rav Sheshet. Sorry, I said the opposite. You'd have to say he holds like Rav Sheshet, the Perot of the Chalipin, because that's the only way he could possibly read this Mishnah. Okay, new Mishnah. Rishut hagavoa bekesef, u'rishut ha'edyo bechazaka. Okay, what does this mean? If you want to be kona something for the Beit HaMikdash, in other words, if you buy, right, what's the case here? If you, I'm trying to remember who buys what here. If you're buying, right, the hekdesh, the Beit HaMikdash is kona mitaltalin. If the gizbar of the Beit HaMikdash goes out to purchase something for the Beit HaMikdash, so he acquires it with money, okay? Even though it's metaltalin. This is a unique halacha by Hekdesh, that the Hekdesh, the Beit HaMikdash, can acquire things using money. I'm reading the wrong place. Okay, but Rishut HaHedyo B'Chazaka. Now here, Chazaka doesn't mean Chazaka. It means, it's a little weird that they use the term Chazaka, but Rashi immediately says it means Meshicha. Maybe there is some other interpretation of the Mishnah according to its pshat, because it's weird they would use the term chazaka, but Rashi says chazaka here means meshicha. In other words, as opposed to kesef, doesn't work with kesef, this we already know, right? If a hedyot is buying something, a regular person, he has to do meshicha. Amirato legavoa ki mesirato lehedyot. Now there's a big line, this is actually a niv in general Hebrew, although I tried to find a good translation and I couldn't 100% understand what it meant. So if anyone wants to, they can figure out what exactly this niv means. I read it somewhere and it says that it means, most of the nivim sites I found, they didn't even have this. But it is some sort of pitgam, so that's why I tried to look it up. I was pretty sure it was a pitgam. It means if you're mirameh something to like a higher, like the reshut, you know, the like a higher up official, it's like you're saying something to a simple person. In other words, I think what it means is that a higher level person will understand something even beremes. Whereas if you say something to a lower level person, you have to spell it out. and that maybe but it must have a little more meaning than that, but I didn't 100% understand it. So homework if anyone wants to figure it out. Anyway, what does it mean in the Mishnah? Halachically, it means that if you say you're going to give something to Hekdesh, it's as if you did Mashicha. Okay, it's like affecting a kinyan. Okay, just by saying something. Okay, we're going to see in the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Ketzad Rishut HaGavoah B'Kesef. How does it work? Gizbar Shenatam Ma'opa Behema. Now they're going to understand the cases of the Mishnah. The Gizbar of the Beit HaMikdash gives money for a Behema. Afilu Behema B'Sof HaOlam. Even if the animal's on the other side of the world. He says, I'm buying this animal that's living in Australia. Okay? Kana. He's Kona, that animal. Ubehedyo lo kana ad shimshoch. Okay, but the hedyot actually has to physically pull the animal. Ketzad amirato legavoa kemesirato lehedyot. Haomer shur ze ola. Okay, I'm going to give this shur as a korban to the Beit HaMikdash. Or bayit ze hekdesh. Afilu besof haolam kana. Okay, even though that item is somewhere far away, he already did a kinyan. And behedyot lo kana ad shimshoch biyachzik. Okay, so now we're going to have some practical ramifications. Okay, even though we're on the next stuff, we'll just continue to the Mishnah. Mishacho b'maneh, mashchu b'maneh, okay, he did a mashicha of something worth a maneh, okay, from Hekdesh. Below he speak liftoto, okay, so he takes something, 1 second, this is where he takes an object. Right, he took an object from the gizbar in order to be podeh, okay, in order to redeem it. And at the point that he did the mashicha, he didn't do the pidyon ad sha'amah b'matayim. And then when he goes to do the pidyon, what happens? It's now worth double the amount. Notem matayim. He has to give matayim, okay? It's always going to go to the advantage of the hektish. My taima, v'natana kesef v'kamlo. Okay, what does it say in the pasuk? He gives the money, and at the moment he gives the money, that's when it's kamlo, right? That's when so at the moment the money is given, that's when the kinyan is affected. So what we're saying here is, mashicha doesn't work. It only works when you actually pay the money. Okay? Mishacho b'matayim, let's say he does mashicha, and it was worth 200 at the time. V'lo hispik liftoto ad sha'ama b'mane. Notem matayim. Ah. But now, this works to his disadvantage. What happens? Even though he only did Mashicha, what happens? When he comes to pay, it's now worth less. So he still has to pay the higher value. My taima, lo yehei koach hedyo chamor mehektesh. You can't say the law about a hedyo, right? If the same thing happened between a hedyo, the kesef is in kone, only the Mashicha. So here, you can't say in a hedyo case, right? So, he did Mashicha. Wait, he did Mashicha already. Right, he would have to pay, right, if he was a hedyot, he'd have to pay the value at the time of the Mashicha. So therefore, he'd have to pay the higher value. So obviously, we're not going to make you pay the hektesh less than you would if you were a hedyot. Pita'o mematayim, let's say you did the opposite. You didn't do Mashicha. You paid 200. Below is speak l'moshcho ad shama b'meh. But when you go to do the Mashicha, it's already worth 100 less. Notem matayim, right? He still has to have done the matayim he gave still stands. Why? My time of anatana kesef v'kamlo. Okay, again, at the moment he gave the money, that's the critical moment. Pida'o b'mane, what if he redeemed it for 100? Below is speak l'moshcho ad shama b'matayim. So now when he goes to be moshech the item, it's now worth 200. Masha pada padoy, ve'ein notem lo elamane. Okay, what he did is, what's done is done, and he only has to give him a mane. Amai. Right? In other words, why don't we say the same thing? So now they say, Atu hedyo lav misha parakai. Wait, so this means, right, could a hedyo be chozer bo after he already got the ma'ot? In other words, this is all about, 1 second. Right, if someone gave money but didn't take the schorah yet, then both of them can change their minds, but the baiting curses them. In other words, if you gave the money but didn't take the item, right, what did we say? A kinyan with kesef shouldn't, right? It doesn't affect a kinyan, you could be chozerbo. But they say that the baiting curses them, okay? And it's called a klala mishapara. Mishapara me anshe dora mabul umidora flaga hu atili parami misha eno me bediburo. Okay, it's basically saying God that punished all the people from that generation, right, will punish also anyone who doesn't stand up for their word. And therefore, You can't change your mind. So therefore, we should say, in other words, in a hedyo case, even though in theory he could change his mind and say, well, now it's worth double, I don't want to buy it. But since he would get cursed for doing that, so therefore this case wouldn't really happen in a hedyo case, and therefore we're not going to make him have to pay the double amount in this case. Okay? Unfortunately, we're not going to learn the next stuff, which is like one of my favorite. It's all about komisvona avala ben na ben ala av, and about brit milah and pidyon ben and all those things, and whether a woman's chayav in them or not, and she's p'tuvah. Anyway, a whole interesting thing. We'll see, though, and kibud avaim. It's going to continue on the next few pages also, but tomorrow is like the main page. So anyway, enjoy the daf on Shabbat.